You're listening to The Voice of the Arts, WQED-FM. I'm Jim Cunningham. Spencer Byam Carson is here. He has a new play. It's on at Carnegie Mellon University. The run is 3 days. It's coming up very soon, so don't miss Penelope. Spencer, welcome.
Thank you, Jim. Happy to be here.
Tell me about Penelope. This is a very old story, but it's a modern, new, fresh take on it.
Yeah. Penelope's written by Enda Walsh, who's an Irish absurdist playwright, kind of a la Samuel Beckett, Waiting for Godot. Those are the pieces that I would probably consider the closest to what Penelope is, because I have to say that this is a really one-of-a-kind play. There's nothing really else like this out there, I feel. I've, over the past year, really just fallen in love with the script and the characters in the world. So, yeah, it's a retelling of the Odyssey, but it's does not really include Odysseus nor the titular character Penelope in the show. It's really about the these four men trapped in a swimming pool adjacent to where Penelope and Odysseus have lived together, and they're Penelope's suitors in the original Odyssey. And it's this kind of Waiting for Godot style show of is she ever going to appear? They every day attempt to sell their love to her. But what makes this day special is that they have all received a prophecy, a dream in the middle of the night. And now Odysseus is returning from the story of the Iliad and the Odyssey kill them for, you know, every day trying to woo his wife.
Why a swimming pool?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question that we really began with and started asking ourselves originally. I think that there's two answers. One is kind of textually, and then one is what I personally think and kind of what my take on this story is. The textual reason I would argue is that an empty swimming pool is like a ruined place, a place of expectation, a place that is just waiting to be filled, and it never does, unfortunately. But then, for me personally, I find the pool as like a place of male competition and male comparison. There's many plot threads of that throughout this script, and what I've really connected to is that these men are just through building a world of comparison between each other, the chance for love to ever exist in this world between each other or Penelope becomes non-existent. Really creating a loveless, hostile world of a lot of male physicality. This is a unquestionably masculine show, I would say.
Does it have a happy ending?
That's also a great question. Would you like me to spoil what happens for the listeners? Or
you never know whether they're all going to get there. I understand these tickets can be tight because
yes,
it's a small theater.
Yeah. Seating 100 people, 50 per side. We're really boxing the guys in to this space, and you're really forced to sit with them as well. I would argue that the show ends with a murder of one of the guys towards the other, and while watching what we've slowly created and pieced together, directing, I would say, is like pointillism, where you are very up close, making a lot of decisions, putting a lot of dots on a canvas, and it's just a matter of being able to step back simultaneously and seeing all of those dots coming together to form the picture. But yeah, what we've built during the show is It feels like that murder is a really painful act, but an act of love. and something that needed to happen for the rest of them to be able to escape the pool. So I argue that they do, that this is a happy ending, although maybe while watching it, it might not seem like one.
And along the way, there's some laughs.
Yes, most certainly. I think that I've overall brought a real sense of humor to this show. It is in the style of some slapstick. I was watching Buster Keaton, Three Stooges, some silent films to get some movement in particular moments, as well as the Bachelorette is kind of a really obvious comparison for me for this show. Reality TV is such a fascinating thing to me because it's obviously coded in unreality. The moment that cameras are on and people realize that they're performing for this invisible audience. And that's what these guys are doing, is that they're performing in this pool for through a camera to Penelope and hopefully in their minds a larger audience than just her, with these four men all vying for one woman's love and just competing against each other for it. That also feels like a funny but obvious comparison.
I must pay more attention to The Bachelorette. You know, it's one of those things everybody, you absorb a little Bachelorette just by looking around for what's on.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see where that would be a fun element of the whole proceeding.
Yeah, that's definitely where the first time that we brought the camera into the rehearsal room, because that was always such a big part of it for me in my mind while during the pre-production process of this show. Finally bringing the camera into the rehearsal room and turning it on was a revelation for me. That was the moment that I was like, we have a show, which is all you ever want. And same thing with our technical rehearsal last night.
Have you seen other staged versions of this particular Penelope Endes?
No. I have not.
Do you know if it's done very often?
It's really not. This was originally written as a part of a European writing competition that was all about doing retellings of the Odyssey. And I believe this was the only play that came out of it. But yeah, Enda Walsh is probably most famous for two things. He wrote the book for the musical Once, which is a musical but also a movie, pretty well regarded. And then he's written a series of these kind of like boxed-in men in absurdist plays. But famously, Cillian Murphy, who just won the Oscar for Oppenheimer a few weeks ago, is his go-to guy and who has starred and opened many of his shows.
Most interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, how did you pull your cast together?
The casting process at school is very different than anywhere else. I basically receive a Google Drive file of all of these self-tapes that the actors have recorded themselves, and then I create a list of who my top choices are for each role, and then I turn that in to the acting faculty, and then I receive back a cast that may or may not resemble the list. But I have now worked with these guys for, I think the first time that we all read the script is like a year ago now. And a year later, I could not be happier with my cast and where we're at.
You mentioned at the front door you were listening to some music, and it could possibly enter into the sound design. Mm-hmm. How much sound design and music is there in the production?
Not as much as I might hope. I originally composed a cue sheet of about 40 different sound cues that were really going back to this reality TV moment. I was pulling a bunch of sounds from reality TV shows that I can't really describe, but I believe if you heard them, you would immediately recognize them as cheesy. It's going back to this sense of humor thing. And we brought those into the rehearsal room and playing them on top of both comedic and serious moments, and just found that it wasn't working at all. So really, in the past 24 hours only, we've cut back all of the sound design by a lot to mostly just support everything, more underscoring. But we do open with a little bit of Danny Elfman's Pee Wee Herman soundtrack. Kind of bring in the clowns. Welcome to this world.
Running time of the play?
About 85 minutes.
Intermission?
Nope.
One 85-minute blast.
Yes. One continuous scene. The four guys enter the stage at the very beginning of the show, and they never leave. It really is an endurance test for everyone, but is really such a joy.
And you do all the directing?
Yes.
You tell everybody where to move?
Well, it's a little bit more than that. I also immediately regretted saying that I do all of the directing. I've actually found this process. This is most certainly not an easy play. This is not a play that you can look at the script and kind of all of the different moments are very clear. This is not like an American classic. So I have really found this to be such a collaborative process from the beginning to the end. My dramaturg has definitely helped given some directing tips. Thank you, Caroline Holmes. I'll shout her out. Has definitely helped me stage plenty of the show.
And what does the room look like? Do you have stage design?
Yeah. The room, are you talking the rehearsal room or the
either or both.
Set?
The set particularly.
Yeah, the set is, glad you asked, it's about 10 different coolers that are moved around at different times to form different shapes and puzzle pieces that these men are working with. And that makes up the majority of the set elements. There's a grill on stage that they use a few times that plays a key part. And we just have a pool wall with a ladder. And then on the opposite side of the stage, this like 8-foot by 6-foot portrait of Odysseus that we've created, because going back to the ideas of competition and comparison, the men can do all of this comparing between each other, but really the person who they want to be and maybe want to be with is Odysseus, as they just marvel at his portrait that they have in their space.
Carnegie Mellon has a world-class reputation for putting people into the theater world who actually wind up with enormous careers and jobs. How does that influence what you do? You're relying on advice and teaching from people who've worked with Broadway greats and film greats.
It's such an honor to be able to receive notes from people who have worked with all these people. I would say that for me, the biggest thing that I feel like I'm getting from my time in school is time. I have money, I have space, I have electricity, I have people, all of these things that I'm going to have to start to really pay for. I have to pay for my set, I have to pay for my actors, pay for the space. That's the biggest opportunity that I'm getting here at CMU, that I'm fully aware that I'm not going to have 15 people helping me on my first show outside of school. But I am really looking forward to graduating.
I'm sure. Now, if folks want to come to see Penelope, what do they do? You have to get in place the day before.
Yes. If anybody wants to come see the show, I need you to listen to me very closely right now. If you want to come see it, you have to get tickets at noon exactly the day before the show, because that's when the box office opens. You can either go in person or you can look it up online, and there's a phone number that you can call. But it has to be exactly at noon, because believe me, I've tried. 5 minutes later, all the tickets are gone.
Very good advice. And you can get the scoop on the website, the process of how to do it. And there's information about the play when you go to the theater department website. It's all there for Penelope.
Yes, for all of my other classmates' shows as well.
It's wonderful. Yeah. The riches. And, of course, it's known in Pittsburgh widely among theater aficionados that this is the place to see interesting new work and classics done in a tremendous quality production. I want to know more about you, though. You've worked with Carla Boos at Quantum Theater, which also has a tremendous reputation. You've worked at City Theater. Mm-hmm. About your influences from these folks.
Yeah, both of those experiences were entirely different, and I actually was supposed to start both of them at the exact same time, but because of COVID, one of them was able to finish my time working at City Theater under Kim Wield. And then my experience at Quantum was then delayed about a year and a half, so I ended up not picking that up until 2021, I think. But yeah, I would say the biggest difference is that one of them is I'm making a pretty traditional work in a theater, working on a Molly Smith Metzler play, who's a great playwright, and that's really exciting. But then working for Quantum, we're working in a old gym and making more site-specific work. And all of the different issues with that of, oh, there's an HVAC system in here that's really going to compete with the actors' voices and the sound. And how can we get airflow in here without just clogging up all of the noise and having an annoying fan running in the background? But, yeah, very different experiences. Yeah.
Why should we go to the theater?
Oh. That's a great question. My friend and collaborator, Priya Dahiya, and I talk about this all the time, of one of the things that we're really trying to break through with people on is, and we've begun a theater company this past year together, that there's this strange divide with people where they say, I like comedy movies, or I like horror movies, or I like dramas. But for the same people, it's either, oh, I like theater, or I don't like theater. And it doesn't have to be this binary, I think. I think that a lot of the work is accessible both in terms of space and language and oftentimes money, but I believe that many plays that I go see I come out of feeling meh about. I would say that I have a strong critical eye, maybe overly critical, but it's a little bit of my job. But there's always like one or two shows a year that I see that are these truly transcendent, cathartic experiences that remind me of why I want to do the work and why this work is important. We live in a continually separated, digitally mediated, enclosed in our own world lives, and it's really important to go outside, go sit in a room with a bunch of people and witness a series of images together. I mean, you're going to have different experiences just depending on where you're sitting, who you are, where you're from. But at the end of the day, it's that bringing together of people that is really all that matters.
And it can be especially powerful in a place like the theater where you're doing Penelope, where you're really close to the action. Broadway, or maybe at the O'Neill Theater in the furthest part of the balcony, still powerful. But when you're right close, that can be very different.
Yeah. Warning for Penelope, you might have some water thrown on you, or maybe a sandwich thrown at you at one point. There's a food fight.
Nice. All right. It sounds absolutely great. Anything else you think people would like to know before they come to this show and to learn about your work and your thinking before they appear on the campus of Carnegie Mellon University?
I have two different websites where if you'd like to check out some of my work, both individual and with my company, you can go to Spencer-Byam-Carson.com or to newproductcompany.com. That's my theater company with Priya Dahiya, which we will have our inaugural performance this summer.
Oh, you got to tell me a little about that. What are you planning there?
Yeah, we are going to do hopefully two different shows in repertory together, where we'll be assisting each other, but also having our own shows that we're directing. My current plan is that I'm writing this trilogy of short plays about Midwestern young men on the internet. I've written one about a leg lengthening surgery of men with the insecurity of their height going through a very painful, arduous surgery to get 3 inches taller. And hoping to do that one again this summer.
I saw leg lengthening on your website. I could not believe it. I had no idea that people would do such a thing. I know that body image is extremely important because of the internet. People have extreme insecurity watching other people on Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and all the other social platforms. But I had no idea that that process... That's real? People actually do that?
Yes, yes, and it's getting even more popular. And then another play that we're hoping to do is adapting a short story collection by author Madeline Cash. Yes, that's the plan for this summer.
I didn't ask you about your influences. Chautauqua was an influence. Did you get to the theater there?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that probably one of the... most exciting productions that I ever saw growing up as a child was a production of The May Queen by Molly Smith Metzler, which I previously mentioned her name, which is just like a very small play of like five people working in like a temp office in the Midwest, and just found the writing and storytelling utterly moving. Yeah, I would say that many of my other influences are some of the more like abstract and avant-garde theater artists like Eva Van Hove and Katie Mitchell.
How about the big budget productions on Broadway? Do you get to New York once in a while?
I've only been able to see a few big budget productions on Broadway. I was lucky enough to study abroad in London last semester, and there I got to see... quite a few shows that have been on my list, including the Daniel Fish restaging of Oklahoma and the Ivo Van Hove production of A Little Life. Both really blew me away.
More about your London experience, please. That's so rare that you were able to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I studied both costume design and set design there. I find that... in terms of directing, what makes everything so much easier is if you know what you're talking about. And for me, if I know what I'm talking about, then I need to be able to do it myself. So learning 3D modeling techniques, and I finally built a box of a set to bring into a rehearsal. And just doing all of that made me so, so much more grateful. I already said thank you plenty of times to my set designers before, but this just made me so utterly grateful for every single one of those that have been built for me, because that took me 25 hours in my dorm room of getting glue and paper mache all over your hands. I have a deep passion for fashion design, and sew myself, and would love to costume design more productions eventually.
Very useful to have a side gig in the theater.
Yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
And that's a special skill to have.
Yes, I already have hyphens in my last name, and my goal is to only become more of a multi-hyphenate.
Anything else in London that you were able to do? You were so tied up and immersed in the theater. I don't know if you had time to look around, travel, see the sights, the museum, the art world there, the Tate Gallery.
Yeah, yeah. I actually just had an email from the Tate Gallery just yesterday saying that my Tate membership has expired. Which,
you must renew.
Yeah. £7, apparently, or maybe it was 70. I the latter makes more sense. Yeah, I did a little bit of traveling. Went to Paris, and at the end of my trip, one of my closest friends, Jeff, is a Fulbright scholar and was finishing up his time in Germany. And I hadn't seen him since COVID hit. So me and a few of my other friends from my previous undergrad, Denison, went to Germany together. And that was a great experience. Also got to visit some of my au pairs. I was raised by only women in a series of au pairs growing up. So
nice.
Got to visit some of my au pairs in Germany, which was lovely.
Spencer, something you will learn about me is I don't like saying goodbye. I hate that. So I hope we'll say Auf Wiedersehen until we meet again, and you'll be back soon with your next production. I want to wish you all the best with Penelope.
Thank you.
Good luck. It sounds like it's going to be absolutely great, and you've only got how many performances to?
Four. Wednesday, 8 p.m., Thursday, 8 p.m., Friday, 2 p.m., and 8 p.m.
There will be many more productions with you in the future,
yes.
I'm sure. All the best to your work in the world of theater and the arts, and thanks for coming by WQED-FM to talk it over.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's been a pleasure.